But I actually just wanted to make one quick comment from the last sugya, but I'm 30 seconds, promise, not longer than that. On Shabbos, I was looking back at the psukim in Yehoshua about where they conquer Yericho and they impose the cherem, and Achan violated the cherem. It just struck me looking through the psukim that there's no mention of Yehoshua making the shvua and the cherem. The sense you get from the psukim is that it was just like Vayishba Ha'am. I thought that was interesting. That didn't feature prominently in the Ramban, but in the psukim, it's more like the Pilagesh Bagiva case with Yanche Yavesh Gilad, that it was like B'nai Yisrael just made the Cherem. And that's the sense you get also from the Yeshua case, if you look at the psukim there. Evan, are you going to make a comment on this? Or?
Yeah, I think it's someone, one of the commentators say that it was exactly what you said. It said it was similar to Pilagesh Bagiva, where it was like everyone got together after the city was destroyed. It's like, okay, well, no one's going to touch any of this. But I was also thinking, like, since the Ramban kind of was playing with it, like, on what level was this Shavua? On what level was this, like, more close to, like, an agreement? Or, I guess...
Well, those two things seem to be close together, right? A shvua.
Right. I'm saying since it had to do with sort of a more monetary thing, as opposed to, let's say, Pilagesh Bagiva, or with the honey, eating the honey or whatever, that other case, but it does seem to be more like, I don't know, more maybe something to do with like Takanas Mammon or that realm. I don't know if that makes a difference, but.
Except that the punishment was Onesh Misa, right?
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Which is far more severe.
Yeah.
Okay. So I just thought that was interesting. All right, you know, on Shul on Shabbos, I usually bring like a Gemara or something. This week I just brought a Tanakh for, you know, I figured Kriya Satorah, and I'd look over these sukkim relevant to Cherem. So I had that idea. Yoni, you want to get a comment on this before? You want to postpone our moving on to Achilas Poem?
Yeah, I don't want to be held liable for that. But wait, I just missed it. You think that Yehoshua suggests that it's the people who made a cherem and not Yehoshua himself?
That's right. If you look at the psukim there, it's quite clear.
How do you explain Yehoshua, like, I just looked it up again, but the fact that he's the one who says it first?
He did it. I don't think he did.
Above your Zion. He does. He said it explicitly.
What does he say?
And Perek Vav, Pasuk Tevzayin, the end of the verse says, "Vayomer Yehoshua la'am hariyu, Natan Hashem alechem et ha'ir," and it continues in Yedzayin, "V'hayita ha'ir l'cherem hiv, v'chol asher ba'al Hashem," and he keeps going, you're talking about the cherem. And then you have Chedrak, Atem, Shimru min ha'cherem, Pentachrimu, Kachtem min ha'cherem. Like, this is the first mention of any cherem, and he's the one who describes it as if, like, he's the one creating it.
So you're in Yehoshua.
Where are you?
This is in Perek Vav, chapter 6, verse 16 through 18. As far as I know, it's the first mention of Cher.
No, so
yeah, Parakat Zion is right.
So you're saying that's all Yehoshua, and he says the city will be proscribed, will be a cherem. Rak rachav azona, blah blah blah. Rak atem shimer min acherem pentachrim lukachtem min acherem. Bachartem also. So you're saying that's a takana of Yeshua. If you look at Pasuk 20, Pasuk Chaf, it's Vayara Ha'am Vayisku Vashofros, Vayikishma Am is called Shofar, Vatibla Choma, Vayachrimu is called Asher Ba'ir.
Yeah, so that means they followed Yehoshua's, like, pronouncements. Maybe it's necessary for both. Maybe you can make an argument that both things are necessary, but certainly Yoshua plays a major role, at least in like setting the goals, I guess, of creating the chair.
Also, the first pasuk in Zion seems to say that it's, oh no, that's something else. Never mind. No, yeah. Like as if they were the ones that were kind of upkeeping all this.
Well, that's they violated.
We have to check. I'm gonna check the BDB. But in Chaf Aleph, there could Vayacharimu also mean to destroy? That yes. Makes more sense. So we can't read Chaf Aleph necessarily as like they followed they followed the Chayram.
That's just the destruction.
Yeah. Because the only way the end of Lefi Charev there, the only verb, Lefi Charev is the modifier on the verb of Vayacharimu.
Right. So where did I get my diak from? I got to look back at it. Oh, well. I have my work cut out for this week's shul.
Maybe you should stick with the Gemara's in shul. It says a sign.
Yeah, Zolt with the burn sauce. Whoa. All right, let me look back at these psukim and then I'll have my response to Zolt. This microaggression here in his Tanakh prowess. All right. I'm going to look back at that. Fine. Knew I shouldn't have raised the Tanakh issue. Okay, so let's talk about Achilas Poel Mishal Balabayis. Very tricky sugya. The Gemara itself is actually difficult to follow sometimes. You see, the Gemara stakes out a certain set of questions that it finds to be central to the sugya. Conceptually speaking, those don't appear to me to be the central questions that are of critical importance. So we get the sugya. Flows from two psukim, at least in Sefer Dvarim, Perek Chav Gimel. You have Kisava b'kerem reyacha b'yachalta anavim k'nafshecha savecha vel kel yecha lo sitein. So Kipshuto, the pasuk here, is telling us you walk into your friend's vineyard, you have this license to eat grapes, to pick grapes from his vineyard. This phrase, k'nafshecha savecha, it's very important in the Gemara, to your heart's content. But you can't take it to go, right? You can't start packing it into your kalim to take home for you. So you have some limited license to consume, doesn't extend very broadly. Same if you walk into like his wheat field. You could take some grains from his stock, but you can't start using harvesting materials, sheath, to cut down his grain. So you have, again, some limited license to pick individually, but you can't start using these like productive instruments to take from his field. There is no mention of poel in the psukim, which is quite striking, but it's prefaced with Kisavo, and then you get this discussion in the Gemara on Pei Zayin Amid Beis. So what do you have in Pei Zayin Amid Beis? Anyone want to tell us what the Gemara here does for us? What's the
story? It makes the Gzeir Shava to Pu'ula Safir of Lotalin, Waso. So it says, oh, just by over there, it says, Lo Tavo Lava Shemesh, not talking about a Poel. I mean, it's not really, it's talking about the sun. But here, just the context is talking about a poel, so do here, Kitavo is a poel.
Yeah, Kitavo Allah Vashamesh is like the sun sets on the poel's workday, right?
Yeah.
So they use that because they were Shavuot to tell us that we're dealing with a poel in this case also. Which is, this a lot turns on this. Are we dealing with like a zechus achila of the poel, or is this a general zechus achila? It's actually not so clear from the psukim. And then even the Megillah Starim is quite intriguing. So tell us a little bit about, we'll talk about Issa ben Yehuda in a second. I just want to draw your attention also to the Rambam. The Rambam follows the Gemara on Pei Zayin about restricting the Zechus Achila to the Poel. but he seems to diverge from the Gemara's actual Gzeir Shava. Right, so what do you get from the Rambam here, Adin?
Yeah, so it seemed like the Rambam is saying that, kind of using it seems like he's conflating it in some way with Nezek, that how could, at least the idea of like B'kamah Shalom Midato, like how could, like Hayitachin, that you have the reshut to just go and eat someone else's food? So like that seems to be motivating him to say like, it obviously must be more limited than just like our initial pshat reading of it referring to anyone.
So good. I would qualify a little bit. I think Zachar, are you responding to that then? You want to respond to him?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I don't think he was focusing on the like la nezek, lo shavachai, lo cholberia. He's saying just even like trespassing, just like just from the pasuk of kitavo, well, who's allowed to enter my field? Not just any random passerby.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly. I read it also as trespass. Right? The Rambam saying the pasuk can't be talking about a random person coming to your field because it's a trespass, right? He has no right to be there. I thought this was fascinating.
But that doesn't solve the whole problem though, because then you might say that any guest in my house has the So if I invite you over for coffee, then once you're in my house and you can be in my field, then you can just go eat my grapes. But that doesn't seem
good.
That doesn't get us all the way there.
Well, hold on one second. The Rambam said, "Piyashmu alamdu she'ein akasim medaber ela b'sachir." Got to be talking about a hired worker. How does he know? V'chi'ilu lo scharo, mi hitir lo sheyavo b'karmeyehu b'kama shelo shelo midaito. If you didn't hire him, who licensed him, who gave him permission to enter into the karem without permission, right? Shelo midaito. Ela kach lomer ki sava lo shesbaylam avoda tocha. Must be that you have permission. What's the case of permission? Must be a case of a poel. So there's a few things to consider here. First is an interesting background question. I'm not really familiar with any robust halachic doctrine of trespass, that the halacha is so makbid that I'm not allowed to be in your kerem if I'm not causing harm to you.
I came across this netziv, which might kind of like fill in like that gap, like specifically there. Like he brings in like Ina Bisha, like look at someone while they're harvesting.
Yeah, that's like the Rambam's phrase of Bikomaso. The Gemara uses that phrase of Hezek Ria. We actually saw some of this in the Midag Hegio discussion, whether it was permission to Yomidal Sadereyu Bishas Komasa. So you think this is probably an Inabisha thing, right? Is that the
suggestion? I mean, maybe. That's pretty hefty to kind of like say like, my pshat in the Pasuk of Kitavo is informed by like Hezek Re'ia. It's like I don't know how powerful it is. You can read that back.
Yeah, even the Netziv, by the way, which thanks for bringing to our attention. It's interesting that he says Kimosha Aser. It's not clear if he's drawing an analogy between the Hezek Re'ia idea. Now, he doesn't say Shari Blavza Aser Lavu Karbakar Mayafa Mipneisha Aser Lamed Al Kamas Re'ia Mishmein Abisha. Sounds like he's just drawing like by analogy. Right? In which case, he might actually be emphasizing the trespass idea of the Rambam. I think, I think this is puzzling because you just don't get the sense that there's this right to exclude somebody from walking through your property in halacha if they're not causing any harm to you, right? So the Rambam's limo just, it seems like it's yesh me'ayin. Zolt, you wanted to weigh in on this?
Yeah, I'd actually add even.
You could talk about those Zenena Zelochaser sugyas, right, where you seem to have a right to be in somebody else's property. Though the Achronim there do talk about.
I was thinking,
Vic. What's that, Evan?
I was thinking that because that came up last year in Belokama stuff and beforehand, Belokama, first time, where there seems to be like kind of agreed consent that if you're not causing any damage, you can go anywhere you want.
Yeah.
The anti-eviction.
What's that, Zaharia?
The anti-eviction Ravya says like, yeah, like lechachila, you can just, if someone has an open apartment, you can live there.
Yeah, exactly. There's that. That's that whole sugya of lechachila b'diavad. According to some Rishonim, it sounds like there's no halachic right to exclude somebody from your property if they're not causing harm. And, you know, some of the Achronim there go the opposite way and they say, it's part of a property right to be able to exclude people from trespassing. You know, it's a bit of mechatesi where any of that comes from. And so it's just striking to me that the Rambam here seems to work with that conception, right? So if you lean on Hezek Re'iyah, fine. But if we're talking about the physical trespass, then it's more mysterious. Zolt, do you have a hand?
Yeah, I was just going to add that, in fact, like, I think, forget, like, whether or not there's, like, some people you're allowed to prevent from trespassing. Like, definitely, like, when it comes to, like, poor people, there's, like, a mitzvah, at least in certain contexts, where they have to come and trespass on your property, take, you know, let get shifra and pay off. So, like, there's definitely, yeah, like, a lot of room for people specifically to come onto your fields.
Yeah.
I would respond that, like, that seems to be a very specific case, though, right? I think even if you would say that there's a din of halachic trespassing, right? Make it tasty, there's a pasuk somewhere in Midbar that says you can't trespass. Like, that would still obviously be like, okay, but an ani to collect, you know, like a shivapeya would be able to.
It's also during a specific time period.
So I think I'm right. So Evan's thing is that whatever heterim there are for an ani, those are limited specific times, right?
Yeah, but they suggest, no, it's not really similar to much time, because leket applies, the leket shukha and peah apply to different times of the year. So it's like we're really talking about most of the harvest season at that point. And second of all, like once, I think the idea is that like once you're already expanding it to anim in general, like it's not, first of all, a baal bayit never has the right to suggest who is an ani, who's not an ani. You don't, that's not something that's in your prerogative. And like at some point, like once you're allowing some people, like I think at the line there is, it's definitely diluted significantly. It's harder to suggest that there's like a strong property right to prevent like random people from coming on if like a name are allowed to just come whenever they want.
I mean, at least from my limited Baba Kama sense, there seems to be some issue of like intent to damage or, right, or I guess in this case, intent to eat. Right, so that could play into it. So if you're coming with intent to cause to eat the food, right? Not something, not intent of worker, that could play into it. Like I know, like you can't just plop your ox into someone else's field because it's going to obviously cause damage. So it'd be somewhat related. I don't know.
Yeah, but I think the issue, the debate between you and Yoni, is more about. Does the license for an ani to come in for like a chikfan peya reflect that in general there's no trespass rule? Or what Evan's saying is that, no, it's a limited right for the ani when he's coming to collect his manos anim for him to come in there. So, yeah, I mean, we don't have to solve that question here. I just think this Rambam is a fascinating source where he appears to be leaning heavily on this idea of trespass to shore up the restriction of this din to Achilas Poel rather than to Achilas Kol Adam. Well, I'll have more to say on this, but I just wanted to flag it right now, both for our sugya and for the property rights question in halacha generally, which is going to be a looming background question when we get into Shomrim and Mashkunos sugyos. Din, you have a hand? First of all, it looks like you're in a really nice place over there.
I'm just on it's nice outside. It's like in the like outdoor field area, and it's all like astroturf though. I agree. My initial reading of the Rambam was hurried and not precise, but it could be that, like, the Rambam clearly is operating. I don't think it's crazy to say that, like, that an inherent, even if it's not a Bethir Shapasik and Bamidbar, that there's that part of what defines like go back to Hofeld last year, like, what is a right to property if not a right to, like, this is mine and I get to, and I decide what happens here? Like, which okay. is like,
so again, I want to flag that right now. This is a very interesting question, and Americans are obsessed with the right to exclude. We'll read some of this, actually. But in like this, in the, you know, in this, in Sweden and a lot of those countries, there's no right to exclude somebody from walking through your farm or field if they're not causing any harm. So we shouldn't have a preconceived conception of property rights, which prioritizes this right to exclude as fundamental to the notion of property, when in fact there are like a lot of regimes which, you know, yeah, you could exclude somebody if they're infringing on you, like your important privacy or your use of your property, but not if they're just harmlessly walking through to get to the other side.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it's a really important point. Good. So I want to move on here for a second. if you look at the, so this is all, whether just the din is restricted to Poel, we get Issi ben Yehuda's reading, which I think is extraordinarily intriguing on Sadi Beis Amud Aleph. Looks like Zecharia was suggesting that Issi ben Yehuda's Megillas Starim is like goes back to Josephus or something. Is that your suggestion, Zecharia? Or?
No, I don't know. I just if don't see Hoffman al Torah said like, oh yeah, it's Issi ben Yehuda and Josephus Hashita on one side. I'm like, all right, we'll look it up.
How's that? Yeah. Interesting. So so the Gemara here quotes Issi ben Yehuda. The Gemara says Amar Rav Matzasim Megillas Starim be'Rav Chia. The Kasuba, Issi ben Yehuda Omer. You can see this is like the equivalent of, I spent the day reading through the Kovei Shitos Kamai and I found the Shita, right? So you're digging through the Megillah Starim and you're like, hey, look what a gem I turned up. So he says, Issi ben Yehuda Omer, Kisavo Becherem Reyacha, B'vias Kol Adam HaKasuv Medaber. Pretty suggestive, just short Megillah Starim, right? Wow, it's not limited to Poel. And then what does that mean? It sounds like everybody has a right to come into your backyard to eat the grapes that are growing on your vines. Is that Issi ben Yehuda's suggestion in Kipshuto? I mean, we'll see Rav objects to this. Lo shavak Issi chai l'chol birya. It's just unsustainable, right? This is, people call the... Economists call this the free rider problem. If people could get a free ride off your investments, then you're not going to have the incentive to be productive. Like, why should you invest in your vineyard if you're not going to be able to reap the benefits? Other people are just going to be able to free ride off you. This is like a variation of a free rider problem. Right? The system is going to be unsustainable, because everyone's just going to come and free ride off your Karen. And so Rav Ashi, I think, is trying to address Rav's concern with Issi ben Yehuda Shita. And he says, Amrisa l'shmaitza kamidra av kahana, dilma ba'osin bisudasan de'avdu va'achlu. Maybe Issi ben Yehuda's theory or his interpretation is limited to a case of osin bisudasan, who are avdu va'achlu. How did you understand that suggestion? What's this Rav's suggestion within Issi ben Yehuda? Evan, looks like you have a suggestion?
Yeah, I think there's just some sort of middle ground worker where he's just kind of working for his meal. And so instead of Rav Issi or Issi, it's not right, making this kind of claim about, you know, the downfall of the economy if you let people come into your field, really the extension from Poel to Kol Adam is to include these more fringe types of Poelim.
So how do you understand that? Who are these fringe Poelim in your view?
These guys who are working for their meal. Like, so they're coming in and just their payment is whatever food they get or whatever their heart, like if the harvest is.
And so what are the mitzias here? I have a
character. So I guess the mitzias is that there's, you know, some guys who will come. I don't know how the pre-medieval orchards work, but I guess there's like these guys that would come and would work your field and just kind of take some food and call it a day.
Yeah, I think that's right. Right. I think the suggestion is it was kind of like a public workhouse where you're not compensated in a salary, but you're compensated through getting your suda, right? Right. Kind of thing. So there's no employment. It's just here's my property, here's my vineyard. Everybody knows a certain amount of work has to be done. Right. The grapes have to be picked. And so the idea seems to be anybody could walk into my Kerem, get some minimum subsistence from my grapes, so long as they contribute productively to harvesting and, you know, furthering the production of the vineyard. That make sense, Evan? So that's a really interesting suggestion, right? This is like almost it's like a public work right that somebody could just come in and do some labor, get a meal out of it, and go home. And the Baal HaBayis would have no right to restrict them. And of course, Rav Kahana's response to Rav's suggested interpretation of Issi is Amar Li, Afilu Hachi Nichalel Enish La'ogir Agure V'niktefe La'pardise V'lo Nesi Kuliyama V'achule. So what's Rav Kahana's response?
Yeah, like the Baal HaBayis, like, okay, so the Baal HaBayis actually hire, if he wants labor done, he'll hire workers and have labor, not just have anyone walk in and perform labor and take payment.
Exactly. You know, you could still support Rav's response of Lo Shavak Issi Chai L'Chol Birya, because that we want to give the employers the control to determine who's going to walk in their vineyard, who's going to work in their vineyard. And if you leave it open that anybody, Kol Dichven Yisei V'yechol, that anybody could come in and get a free meal out of working, then employers are going to lose the kind of control. They're not going to be able to manage their vineyards in the right way. Adin, you have a hand?
Yeah, so could we just frame Rav Kahana as like, isn't this just a fairly simple application of Yored? Like, what's the chiddush of this pasuk? It's not like, isn't that exact, like, that I can go and do and provide is a chiddush that I can just take the payment and like I can take the payment straight from the vine and not go to you and demand kesef or something like that? But
do you mean Ravashi?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Ravashi and the Kamei Rav Kahana. So it's just it's Yored, isn't it?
So it's not Yored. It's weaker than Yored. We'll talk about Yored later in the year. Yored is the idea that if I confer a benefit, that I'm entitled to the compensation for the benefit I confer, right? So that, I think that's a more robust notion than this. This is a weaker conception where I'm not being compensated for my work. I'm simply given a chila right as I'm working. So I wouldn't be compensated for the value of my contribution. It's just that I could subsist. I'm entitled to a means of subsistence, or at least some basic right of achila as I'm working for you. I don't think it's compensatory.
So you're saying it's not going to be, it's not tied to the amount of benefit. Like the amount of grapes that I'm allowed to eat is not tied to the amount of financial improvement I'm investing in your kerem.
Exactly. Okay. Now, I think it still raises this further question: what exactly is this principle, right? Is this like a public? It's like a soup. It's the equivalent of a soup kitchen, right? Come work for the day, and you're automatically entitled to food. But it's not clear if there's a requirement that somebody has to be an ani in order to qualify for this, right? So it's an interesting question: what exactly this idea is. I want to just point you to the Miri's formulation. He says, "Kfar biarnish lohutra achila el sachir, aval shar bnei adam habayim bimikre aser lahem, vafilu hayu misayim bimalacha meilehem." I think that's his ruling out of Ravashi's interpretation of Issi, right? The mere fact that you're there and you're helping out, that's not sufficient to justify the entitlement. And then he says, "Mikamacham im shalom hu lekach kol shekein shehem mutarim." Interesting idea. Suppose you're not a poel, but you were asked to help out. You know, invariably this happens in the Heights, right? Or if you live in a firm community, "Well, I'm just moving a couch. Do you mind dedicating 10 hours to help me move the couch?" Right? You know, it's not a big deal. And then you know you're stuck there for the day. So Issi ben Yehuda says, Sorry, the Miri thinks that gives you the entitlement. You don't have to be a formal worker to have this entitlement. Make sense? I think that's what the Miri is getting at. You don't need like the Chaloshem Poel being paid. If someone asked you to be involved in the labor, sounds like that circumvents the Lo Shavik Chai L'Chol Birya problem because you were requested to be involved. Right? So you're still giving the owner the right kind of managerial control. Okay, that's this foundational question about whether we're talking about Poalim or are we talking about Kol Adam. Maybe it's anybody who's working, the Avdu V'Achlu suggestion. What exactly, even in the Makor, is the Makor about limiting it to Poalim, as the Gemara seems to suggest, or is it about the Rambam's concern that you have to be justified in being there to trigger the right, not so much that this is something unique to having a chaloshim poa. Any just thoughts before, we'll talk more about this a little later on, but I wanted to just get the range of discussion here about who is the sugya talking about on the table early. Maybe I'll just draw our attention to one last makar. Anybody get a chance to see the Bar Benel at the end of the source sheet? No one got to see Don Yitzchak? Don Isaac? Okay, so let's take a quick look there for a second. Okay, sorry, my screen just went a little strange. Okay, so at the end of the source sheet, we have the Bar Benel in Dvarim Chav Gimel. He has this ha'ara that the psukim in context there are talking about Melchama. I think it's the beginning of Parshas Kisetze. I'm going to double check because I know Zolti is here checking my Tanakh references. Oh, look, I'm right. Zolti, you want to rebut my... it's Dvarim Chav Gimel. And we're in the... Where Torah talks about all these dinim of, let's see, of Melchama, Kiseitza Melchama Levecha, et cetera, et cetera. And then you get towards the end of Parakov Gimel, just Kisao Bakarim Reyacha. It's not obvious if you ask me. I guess in the beginning of Chav Gimel Yud, Kiseitza Machane Levecha, Nishmarta Mikol Devar Ra.
There's a lot of psukim in between there.
Yeah, you used to have Losaskar, you have Ladona, Losiakdesha, Isidor Nedar in between, Losashik.
Nesheh.
Could it be he's just kind of making the observation that just like historically, it always has been the case that like troops going through just kind of entirely plunder fields and there's a tremendous harm? And you're saying the Torah's coming to defend against this?
Yeah, it could be. But it could be. I think he's not talking about plundering in war. So I wouldn't, it's not about like looting and.
Mm. It's more like quartering kind of.
Yeah, it's quartering, like forced. Yes, yeah.
Was it a Fifth Amendment? Fifth Amendment? Fourth Amendment?
Fourth Amendment.
Yeah. So it's less about quartering soldiers and more about providing for them, right? Or what licenses do they have as they're coming through town? And so the Bar Benel says, Ofisha Bishasa Mohama, Aholchim Eleha, right? People traveling to the front. You can imagine, right, the soldiers are traveling up, let's say, to the Golan, and they're passing through all those kibbutzim. So, yavo bikramim uvekama v'yochlu v'yizbu. It's just natural, right? They're going to pass through these, like, kibbutzim, and they're going to eat along the way, and they're going to take food from the locals. So it's not plundering, it's too strong, but they're going to support themselves from it. Gam yitznu el kilehem v'yashchisu eitz belachmo. The concern is that if they take too much, then they're going to, you know, destroy all the crops and produce along the way. Hine, and notice he points to the psukim in Bukhukose, it's a few cherev shel shalom. It's not so much that they're not fighting against the locals, but they're just going to be taking stuff from the locals as they go. And he says, Hine bavur zeh ba kan mitzvah skisavu b'kamas reyacha wa salomar. He puts the emphasis of the pasuk not so much on the right that the person has to eat the individual grapes, but the real locus of the din is in preventing el kelyocha lo sitin, by telling you can't take too much. That's the like the pasuk is not here to generate the affirmative license to take a little. It's here to generate the iser on taking too much, which is interesting. And in this, at this point, he doesn't really think it's limited to Poalim. Right? It sounds like, the troops, people passing through, the Torah is saying, don't take too much. B'chazal kiblu b'sifrei shev Poal akasim medaber. that even someone who's employed and allowed to work there, he shouldn't take too much, because that would be considered gezel gamor. We have a comment in the chat. Yeah, I think that's right. So yeah, I think he has these like prakim wide readings of things. All right, so Zolti, is that what you're gonna say?
Yeah, it's just like if you look through like the whole parak, I think he reinterprets it all within like the lens of it, like going through a war. He just like reads that as like the consistent theme.
Yeah, so I think that's congenial to the Issi ben Yehuda, not limited to Poel read. He starts off and says, oh, Chazal or Mekavim and Sifrei, that maybe it applies to a Poel, or it's limited to a Poel. But it sounds like he thinks it should really have broader scope than that. Right, Yoni? Okay, good.
I guess, although, I mean, like, it's obviously like a perish, like, I'm not sure, like, how halachic he means it, but, like, in some ways, like, I'd argue that, like, a soldier, like, walking through is not, like, it's not an open invitation for anyone. Like, soldiers specifically have, like, you know, historically some sort of, like, quartering rights. Like, there's, like, a concept of, like, the soldiers do need food. They do need a place to sleep. So there might be more of, like, an open invitation to them more than for,
yeah,
like, yeah, regular people.
Okay. I'm going to put this back. I put this earlier also. I think it's sure they have this in the Issi ben Yehuda section. So anybody have thoughts more on the question of the scope, Poel, non-Poel? We're going to nail this down a little further, but I think it's one of the central questions that we're going to have here in the sugya, and just characterizing what the din is. So who does it apply to? And also, what's the real emphasis of the pasuk? Is the emphasis of the pasuk more on the license to take or on the iser not to take too much? Yeah, Kira, do you have thoughts on this so far?
No, nothing beyond what you presented.
Okay. So I want to turn a little bit to getting to the heart of what this din might be about. Hard question to pose. Let me say this in by drawing our attention to three separate questions. The first is, how would you characterize, like, what is the chiyuv, like, what's the mitzvah? Right? In what sense is this primarily a chiyuv on the Baal HaBayis? Is this primarily a zchus that's given to the poel? Anybody have a sense in that question? I should email out, we've seen this in years past, right? There's this whole idea that the mitzvos are fundamentally like, it's like a duty-based system, not a rights-based system. And we saw this in the cover article. I'll resend it out this year. And it's just interesting, if you look at the Rambam in his Hakdama to Hilchos Schiros, so the mitzvah dalid, he says, this is part of the mitzvah saseh of Hilchos Schiros, sheyochal hasachir min hamechubar she'osebo. Interesting formulation. What does that mean? Sheyochal. I think this is a lot of sheyochal. I think in Hebrew is semantically ambiguous between being a duty and a license. I don't think he means that you have a chiyuv. The poel doesn't have a chiyuv to eat. That would be, you know, seems funny that the Torah should be mechayev of a worker to eat from the Baal HaBayis. But he says, sheyochal hasachir, I think it's a license, right? It's permissible for the poel to eat when he's doing work.
You could frame it as a duty. I think it's possibly that as that the Baal HaBayis has to provide food. It's not a duty on the socher to eat, but a duty on the Baal HaBayit to allow him to eat, kind of.
And you think that's the best reading of sheyochal asachim and amachubar is
that, like, it needs to be provided for him.
That's reading a lot into those words. I don't think the words support that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think like the Rambam knows how to say it's a mitzvah al Baal HaBayis. I think it's a very striking distinction between the Koteres and the Halach Aleph here.
Yeah, I think right.
Deliberate.
I think Adin's right. And when you look at Halacha Aleph, let me just pull that up. I had it here. Well, I guess I have to.
In the top.
At the top. Because I have it for a different reason. I'm just gonna copy and paste this again here for a second time.
I would respond that all the subject of all those other ones, Litain spot, like if you scroll up and like in his list of the chiyuvim of the mitzvah, like you up slightly.
One second. So what's this? He's here characterizes it. Hare al bala bayis. Mitzvah sheyaniach osan lechol mimashahin osan bo. It's a total total reformulation. This is what you were getting at, I think, right?
Yeah, so I think you say in the subject of all the other verbs up there, sheyitin, shelo yeacher, it's all in the bala bayis. So while I agree that like litin schar biyomoshel yeacher schar schirachar, but like those, that's all referring to the bala bayis. I guess the hay is now you're right. Hey is clearly on the poel. All right, so no. I recant.
The subject in the psukim, the Baal Bayis is absent in the psukim. It's all the sachir in the psukim, and I think the Rambam reflects then the sefer mitzvah in the Koteres here. He says the sachir is the subject of all three mitzvos. I don't know. I think you could kind of get very excited about it and kind of say, oh, it's because it's Michel Shemayim and really the Baal Bayis has no place in this. It's really just going straight from Shulchan Gavoa to the Sachir. And okay, fine. Practically, if you ask me what the mitzvah looks like, it looks like Baal Bayis is allowing him to eat. But really, you know,
yeah.
I feel like you could go in that direction just from that. I mean, like even in the Pasuk, like I think the Barbanel's diuk is correct, as in it frames it in the kind of just like, oh, when you enter the field and you're eating, don't do this. As in it kind of takes the right for granted and just limitation is an extra thing. It's like there's a lot of emphasis of just like it's the sachir who's making all the calls here.
Yeah, that is very interesting. I want to come back to that point about what exactly is the locus of the, is this fundamentally a permission? Or is the Torah creating the permission for the poel to take, or is the Torah generating the iser taking too much? And that's really a fundamental question here. I do think sheyochal hasachir min hamechubar, it's just a license on the sachir. I think that's really interesting, by the way, just because in terms of this that cover point that the mitzvot are fundamentally a system of duties, not a system of rights. So obviously we could, you could talk back and forth. Is it mostly a system of duties and are there some rights? This is a clear case where the mitzvah is really seems to be a license, right? At least if you take the Koteret. The mitzvah is not a commandment, not a duty, but just a license that the Poel has this permission to eat min ha-mechubar she'oseh bo. When you get into Mishnah Torah, the Rambam formulates it differently. And, to me, it's important that the Rambam says, "Hare al bal habayis mitzvah sheyaniach osan lechal mimashein osan." Right. So the Rambam just infers from this pasuk that the bal habayis has a duty to forbear from interfering. Right. From he has a duty. Not to prevent, or he has a duty to leave the poel to consume from what he's producing. Right? It's not a duty for the Baal Bayis to provide payros for the poel. It sounds like it's a duty to not interfere, right? Sheyaniach osan lecha mimah shehein osan bo. Isn't that right? Hello. Akir, do you have thoughts on this?
I wasn't sure whether yaniach meant like you're saying it, or the yaniach means in the sense of like being miniach peyad, like leaving fruit, which sounds more like it is about providing.
But he does say sheyaniach osan. I think the object there is the poalim, right? You should leave them alone to eat from what they're making, from what they're working in.
Yeah, okay.
Right. So I think the object of duty, so it's a duty not to interfere with the poelim when they want to consume. It's just that the duty is not to interfere with their license, their permission to eat from the tvuah, the produce that they're making. Didn't you have a comment?
Yeah, I'm not 100%. Initially, I was very excited about this connection, and I'm getting slightly less. That the fact that the Rambam seemed to have like a stronger inherent conception of focusing on the inherent, his inherent understanding of property, right? In defining the hava mina via trespass, could like that if the balabait has a stronger claim on his own stuff than maybe we would have thought, then maybe it makes more sense to frame this as he has a duty to relinquish that right.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like that. You're putting together the diuk about the trespass point. In principle, the balabais does have a right, right? These strong property rights.
Yeah.
And here is to not assert that right. So like put that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like that.
Yeah. It would have made more sense, I think, if the Rambam had framed it like Yakir had said, then it would have made more sense because it's still if he's relinquishing his rights, then the object of it should be on the property. He has to allow the property to be eaten, or he has to allow the payer to be eaten.
No, I think it's fine. I think it's fine even with Yakir's, even without that reading. I think it's fine to say that Balabais has the right to exclude people from taking his stuff. It's part of his property, right? He can keep them off the property, he can keep them eating the property. And his chiv here is to not, right? He's to not assert that right. Yeah. Zolt?
I actually was thinking, at least in the Kotaret, I mean, it's like almost absurd to think that's what he means, but it sounds like that it's almost like there's like a mitzvah assay that the poel should eat. Not just that he has a license, but almost he has a duty to eat.
Interesting. I think the Hebrew, far from Baal Shan, but I think the Hebrew Yochal is ambiguous in the English between saying like it's a he could eat, right? That he ought to eat. I don't think like so sheyochal that he. I just don't think Hebrew has the right word.
I just looked up Rambam quickly to see if he has a language anywhere else, and in the Kotaret in regards to Korbanot, he has language of sheyochlu akohanim basar kachim kachim b'mikdash. Like a mitzvah, they should eat the kachi kachim. And that is, he does believe that's a mitzvah, like that Khan should actually partake in it, not that they have the permission to partake in it.
I'm not saying that the Hebrew thing, it means one thing and not the other. I'm saying that the Hebrew phrase, sheyochal, is ambiguous between the English translation of the ought to and like he has a permission to. Because so in some cases, it'll mean one thing and other cases, it'll mean something else.
Okay, I still think it's interesting, though.
Yeah. I mean, we should look more into these formulations here. I just don't think looking elsewhere is dispositive because it means different things in different places. The word right.
Okay.
Zachary, you're gonna make a
point. It's something that the Gemara notices and kind of leverages a lot. But the way the Rambam phrases the form of the mitzvah is exactly like lo tafsam. It's an exact kind of action. You have an owner who has some people or animals who are working for him, and it's merely just an allowance to allow them to eat. Do not stop them from eating. And I mean, I don't know, I just found it shocking how comfortable the Gemara was. Hekesh of Chosem Plenechsam, and just like learns most of the halachos from there.
That's really important. So I
thought that the Rambam was kind of gravitating more towards that in the Mishnah Torah than in the Koteres. And the Koteres, he wants to kind of distance from that.
Yeah, so it's like you shouldn't muzzle the poelim, right? That's kind of that's good, and I think that important to losach that connection to losachim shor b'disho is very important. And you'll see I put a whole section here in the Mar Makomos to show that the Gemara thinks that connection is very important. The Gemara seems to think that there are dinim that could be learned interchangeably from one to the other, or at least through Kal v'Chomer. And I think that's going to be very important for our characterizing the din. I want to draw our attention now to two other related points. So the first is, the Torah says Kisava b'Kerem Reyacha, and what's Kerem Reyacha coming to exclude? So the Gemara has two limudim, karam reyacha v'lo b'karam nachri, it's more on pezayin in the base, and b'karam reyacha v'lo shel hakdash, that this din doesn't apply to a karam nachri or to a karam hakdash. Which din doesn't apply?
Thing that you can't eat, right?
So it's ambiguous in the Gemara, right? The Gemara just says the din doesn't apply. Which part of the din, right? What's the din? Is the din that you have a license to eat, or is the din that you can't consume too much? Right, I'll call you chalo sitein.
Oh, is it, but certainly referring to, okay, yeah, sorry, never mind.
Right. By the way, just going back to the Rambam, I would just point out that, well, the Rambam has two dinim. Right, the Rambam has sheyochal hasachir menam v'chubar sheosebo and shelo yolich hasachir biyado yaser al masha yochal. Right, so there's like a, an asay and a lav. In the Gemara here is machlokes rishonim whether this limitation of lo b'karam nachri and lo b'shal hekdesh is trying to tell you that the iser gezel of b'kel yochal lo sitain doesn't apply in those cases. You can see Rashi says, "Karam reyacha v'al kel yachal lo sitain, al karam nachri titain." So for Rashi, it sounds like it's the prohibition of al kel yachal lo sitain is what gets waived in the karam nachri case, right? You have a permission to take as much as you want in that case, which takes the license as assumed. The Ritva goes the other way, and the Ritva says in this Dira Maswa Hanichal Madam Argezel Goy Aser, he says there's no license of eating in the case of Kerem Goy. Kisav B'Kerem Reyacha means that the Heter Achila is limited to Heter to Kerem Yisrael. And he says, in this case, Lo Yochal, the achshavei rachmana kegezel, kiven deihu la bar mitzvahu. Since the guy is not a bar chiyuva, the Torah doesn't require him to provide you with these special eating rights. You see that? So it's like almost like kerem reyacha is almost like a duty imposed on the baal hakerem to grant the workers this like special consideration, the special privilege of achila. If the Baal HaKerem is a non-bar chiyuva, either as a guy or as hekdesh, then the special heter achila wouldn't apply. That's also very important for characterizing A, what the thrust of the mitzvah is, and B, what kind of a mitzvah it is, meaning it sounds like this starts with a duty on the Baal HaKerem. That's what generates the din. If the Baal HaKerem is not the right kind of person to bear this duty, to bear the mitzvah, because either he's a goy or hektish, then the permission wouldn't exist at all. You have I don't want to get into this here, but by tzedakah, there's a similar question. Could an ani have a zechus tzedakah against somebody who's not a bar chiyuva in tzedakah? And here, the Ritva seems to be saying, you start with the duty, you have to be a bar chiyuva in order for the poel to have this chasachila. Anybody have comments on this? We'll talk more about it in greater depth. But it's an important thing to get in al derech hakdama.
Are we bothered by the fact that Rashi like splits the difference and says that like Karamaya, like the Shel Hekdesh, obviously, like I don't think there's a coherent reading that Shel Hekdesh is referring to. It's not going to be a kula by Hekdesh. Right. So,
except that for hekdesh, it might be there's an external constraint just that it's hekdesh, nothing to do with gezel.
But then you don't need a limud. Like then that's
right. So Tosos addresses that. What's the havamina? But I think you might say that Rashi might think in principle, like mitam, the license to eat. You have a license to eat from hekdesh, like from the legal ownership question. But it's like the actual ontology of hektish iser that stops you from eating it. I didn't?
Yeah, I was reading the sifrei that Zachariah plus
eight. Yeah, so I just that's kind of a different direction. The Sifrei kind of leverages both. The Gemara makes it sound like they're mutually exclusive, these Re'echa. The Sifrei kind of excludes both, and presumably it's doing the exact same exclusion that you don't get to eat at all. That's just kind of worth thinking about, that Rashi is kind of a little bit out on a limb suggesting that, oh, of course you have a right to eat with the Nefri and you have a total right. I don't know. I think it's very strange that Rashi has a total, Rashi has a total, just takes for granted that of course the pole will have a right to eat. Maybe he gets the right to eat more. I don't know how he would respond to the Ritva's points here.
Wait, so I'm confused about what the Sifrei contributes and what.
So the Sifrei kind of just darshens both of them from Re'echa at the same time. He uses them both as kind of. There's no contradiction there, so presumably it's because they're going in the same direction. They're both exclusionary, as in that you have no right to eat. Kind of.
You're saying while in the Gemara it's going to be like you're either you're only going to adopt one because either if you think Gezal Goy is mutter or usser. Is going to affect which like conclusion limud you sit with.
Exactly. As in, on one hand, Rashi kind of fits well with the Gemara in that sense that they are mutually exclusive.
And I'm not sure if in the Gemara they're actually mutually exclusive. It's like a shock of the target question. I think the Rama might paskin both. I have to check. I mean, the Gemara is just saying, oh, if it's limited, how do you make, if you hold whatever about Gezel Akam, how do you make sense of the Lima and the Hektish, but it's not clear that the Gemara is committed to them being exclusively disjunctive, that it's one or the other, an exclusive disjunction. We could talk more about that.
I think the Rambam excludes Hektish, but he doesn't hold Gezel, Nafri, Mutter.
Okay. Yeah. We'll talk more about this. Right now, I want to just get out the point about is when we're memai the din, when we exclude this pasuk prat le nachri prat le hektish, is that coming as a heter on el kelyafa lo sitain, or is it saying that there's no license to the katafta navim, right? You can't even eat it at all. So I think that's one important point. And there's a second important point, which is why should Hektish, if we take the Ritva reading, why should Hektish and Nachri not generate a Heter Achila? That seems to imply that the duty on the Baal HaKerem is primary, right? Like in the Rambam's phrase almost in Mishnah Torah, that there's a mitzvah l'haniach. But if there's no mitzvah l'haniach, then of course he can interfere, right? So the guy is not going to have the mitzvah l'haniach, and so he has a right to interfere. Adin, you have a comment?
Well, I've only noticed this because we pulled up the parak before because of the Abar, but now that the mitzvah of Neshef is, or the Isser of Neshef is just like a few psukim earlier. Because when I originally read the Ritva, I read it more like the way I've always been taught, like the heter of Neshef to a non-Jew, that like maybe this is some sort of unique, like a Kol Yisrael Araven duty that we had, like, obviously it's limited. It's limited to the Baal Abayit Pol relationship, but like if the Nachri is not included in this special group, then this, like, this is like framing it, not this is an obvious inherent right of the worker, that this is a special privilege given to workers who are within the Jewish contract with each other.
Yeah, I think that's very important. You see this not just in Ribbis, and that's the famous Ramban in Ribbis, Ramban al Torah, that it's a din in Re'echa. It's like more Gemilas Chasadim, less Gezel E. But you see this also in Ezekiel, that it's Shor Re'ehu sometimes, Shir HaShavas Aveda. I think that's a very, very basic and important distinction in all these dinim. Like, are these like fraternity halachos, right? That depend on a certain shared sense of fraternity of reus that generates the achrayus, or is there something more basic and fundamental to it, right? And so I think Re'echa is an important trigger to consider that line of reasoning, that this is like a fraternity halacha rather than some basic conception of justice.
And that would also affect which way you're going to, like the Rashi versus Ritva way of how you're, like, if it's a fraternity-based thing, then it's much more simple that you don't have the rishus lachol. But if we don't buy that argument, then the argument saying that, like, oh, that you can take as much as you want from a non-Jew becomes a more reasonable
sure,
approach.
I'm not sure, because the reyus could cut both ways, right? The reyus could cut from what duty does the Baal Hasadah have to the Poel, but also what duties and responsibilities does the Poel have towards the Baal Hasadah?
But what does that have to do? But like,
so for example, you might think that it being Kerem Reyacha is why you have a chiyuv not to do too much.
Oh, okay.
See what I'm saying? It's,
yeah.
Okay. Good. I want to make at least one more point here. A third important avenue of analysis for characterizing the Sfos Achilas Poel, and that's this idea of kinafshecha. It comes up several times in the sugya. Anybody remember, like, what the, at least in, let's take this context in Pei Zion and Beis, that the Poel is Ochel Kinafshecha. Kinafshecha Savecha. And the Gemara Darshins, Kinefesh Shel Baal Habayis, Kach Nafsho Shel Poel. Right? Ma Nafshecha Ochel Upater, Af Nafsho Shel Poel Ochel Upater. It's a really illuminating din. So that means, some background, as you probably realize from the sugya, the Gemara here is obsessed with the question of kviya, like, when's Gemara Malacha L'Inyan Maaser, right? So one thing that could prematurely trigger a chiyuv Maaser is what? Anybody know? All our Zoraim experts?
A
Mecca transfer. If you were to transfer it to a third party, then it's as if there's, like, premature Gemara Malacha. And you might think, and I think this is one of the foundational questions in the sugya, is the Poel's entitlement to the Ochel, is that like a third party right in it, that he has this claim right to take, like to gain an affirmative claim in it, as if it's being transferred to him? Or does his entitlement to it stem from the same place that the Baal HaBayis' entitlement to it stems? I mean, it's just like considered to be a direct entitlement, not via somebody else's entitlement that has to be transferred to him. This gets back to that important issue in the Rambam, right? You know, what does it mean, lahaniach lahem likach? Does that mean he has to provide for them? I think not. Not that the Baal HaBayis has to give them. That would imply there's some sort of transfer. I think the phrase here in the Gemara, in the pasuk of kenafshecha sabecha and kenefesh shel Baal HaBayis kach nafsho shel poel, that suggests, Rashi says, ki ilu hein shelcha. It's as if it's the poel's directly. The lower minan hoel deva agri achil al karfo shel Baal HaBayis havali kemekach. It's not like a mekach. A kinafshecha means that the Poel has this direct entitlement. And I think that's going to help us in characterizing the din. The Torah just assigns it to the Poel directly as if it is his direct property. Anybody have some suggestion why that might be the case, or what that gets at, what that might be? So I wonder if we're just dealing with something analogous to Lo Safsom Shor B'disho, assuming it's about Tsar, does the din have to be structured as kenafshecha, as if it's yours, and as if it's the Poel's directly? If the point here is just, we don't want somebody to be in pain while they're working, so, you know, make sure they could eat from the stuff. I wonder if this idea points to something more fundamental.
Yeah, I don't know. I was wondering kind of this kind of towards the other extreme of to suggest that the kind of the kashka shel Baal HaBayis kach nafsho shel Poel, that maybe if you read it in both directions, that in some sense, the Poel, while he's working with this harvest, is in some sense a Baal HaBayis over this stuff. And that is what generates his right to eat. Therefore, it's kind of which is, I don't know, that's kind of shocking. I wouldn't necessarily expect that if I didn't see this drasha. But once you're saying that, and therefore you don't have to, you're not saying, oh, he's Zabal Inyan Meiser. Is this for, it's just like, he simply just during this stage, it's kind of like, you know, he's putting in the work. He just automatically, or at least Zichta Torah, to the sense that he's an owner over this stuff.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I'm getting at. I agree 100%. I think this, you have to read through a sugya and figure out, which dinim are ancillary and which dinim are primary. In the sugya, this just arises in this question of, is there chiyuv meiser, right? I think, though, for characterizing the nature of the din, this might be one of the most important pieces of evidence to, like, the nature of the halacha, that's right. It shows that the worker has some more basic entitlement to the thing that he's working on. I didn't frame this very nicely. It's all a property rights question, right? It's the property rights of the Baal Bayis versus the property rights of the Poel. Who is the Poel anyway? He's a hired hand, right? Like, why? And so one reading of the sugya is like, yeah, he's a hired hand, but the Torah, says, make sure he has enough food, right? I think this idea of kanaf shecha is pretty prominent in the Pesukim, and when the Gemara says it's ki'ilu hein shelo, that might speak to this halacha being about, yeah, there's a sense in which the property rights of the Poel are a direct claim on the thing, right? After all, he finalized this, like, last stage of production. We'll talk more about this. Might be worthwhile looking at Locke. Locke has this famous thing about, like, labor mixing as an entitlement to owner, like what generates ownership. Maybe there's like a small dimension of that here in the Poel's right to, the some of the payrolls are his. It looks like you have a comment you want to make on
that? Yeah, I'm like, the two responses to that idea. So number one, so like to say that Zachar has a suggestion that he like becomes a Baal HaBayis on these pairs, like we see later in the sugya, like the extent to which like he can't put salt on it, and it's such a limited application of if we want to call it rights that he has, that it seems difficult for me to say that it's an actual claim right that he has, it's so limited to like, I would be like almost like unimaginably limited claim right. And also the idea that if we take it as coming from losaxum, I don't think we say that it's not like, oh, the ox has a claim right on the food that he's eating. Like it almost goes the complete opposite. Like, no, he's not a ball of ice. He's like, it's literally like almost an extension of my own labor or something like that. Like the same way I get to eat from my, he doesn't get his own new claim right that he gets to exercise. It's like the same way that like the ox gets to eat, so it has fuel, and it would be unfair to not do it. So too the poet.
Okay, but I have two responses to that. With respect to your second point, we'll do al achron rishon val rishon achron. So achron rishon, I think that's just because donkeys don't have property rights. So yes, makish chosem lenechsam, nechsam lechosem, kalvachomer mishor, etc. But there's got to be, what do they call it? Like mitatis mitandi, right? It's, you got to make all the relevant changes. Right, Adin?
So yeah, but I would just say that, like, so, you're comparing apples to bananas then. That's what
it's not. Meaning, I think the idea is that the working relationship of a Poel has the power to generate these property claims in the product of his labor. Not so for a donkey. So the donkey's, the din of a shore doesn't generate property claims. The din of a poel does. And that's just because the difference between human labor and animal labor. Akir wants to say something?
Yeah, I mean, I think Adin's point is a strong one here. I think that I'm looking at the Rashis again, and I think that I'm sympathetic to your reading, but I think there's a reading that's at least almost as good, maybe equally good, that the Poel has no property rights on this stuff at all. In this respect, he's just a yada richta of the Baal HaBayis. And so it's Gilei and Shelcha because the Poel is now the Baal HaBayis. He's just the other if the balabais. He's just like the balabais's donkey. When he eats it, he's eating the balabais's stuff because he is the balabais.
As like a Shalatim Kimoso idea? Is that the...
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't even think about that. I need to think about that. That's an interesting read. We'd have to look there. So this idea comes up throughout the Gemara of Kilu Hain Shalo.
Right.
You know, you could see, you know, even in this Chasimas Poel, Manafshecha and Chasamta Pater, Akol and Chasamta Pater, we should look at those things, right? So we want like a better assessment of all these dinim. So I agree, Akira, I'll keep that in mind. We should keep our eyes open for that distinction.
Yeah. Again, I think and then there's another possibility that, you know, because if we really think this is like sanctioned gzela, I think this is weaker than what we've said so far. But I think Yiluin Shelcha could just be that, well, there was no mekach because the poel stole it. Because it's sanctioned, the property right now comes into existence. But that doesn't mean that it's this fundamental thing that had to exist all along.
I agree. I'm asking that you could read it the other way. I think we'll have to, as we get deeper into this question, like look at all the evidence in the sugya and see, you know, where the preponderance of evidence lies, like in my side or in your side. So yeah, I think that's a very good point. But I'll rishon acharon, the second part of my response to Adin. Adin, what was your
first? I'm trying to remember. That all the limitations the sugya imposes of like adding condiments and stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't think that's
it's a very weak claim, right?
I don't think that's fair because that's just conflating the scope of the claim of the right with its nature.
Right,
so I think it's perfectly fine for it to be a limited right to eat a few things. You know, maybe it's symbolic, right? Or maybe, you know, we have competing interests. We have the balabais's property right. We have the poel's property right. And so the poel is just very narrow. But that doesn't mean that it's not a basic right. So
yeah, I hear.
I don't think it's fair to conflate those two issues. Let's just conclude for today with this reading of Rabbeinu Bachya in on these psukim. He, you know, hats off to him that he provides us with this nice rationale for the din. And he says here, I think in an interesting way, though I think he takes a wrong turn, which he shouldn't have taken. He says, "Vel kalicha lo siteim ze yegezel, va Torah lo hitira ela kenega nefesh hamisabe." I think that's nice. I mean, this is like the Lo Saksam Shor Bedisho idea. It sounds almost like it would be cruel or you'd be desiring, right? Here you're working in Golan, right? You're making all the food and you can't taste the thing, right? And then he says, this part's also okay, I think. Ki kivan shehu misasek v'toreach v'peirosav. Something about the fact that you're working and are involved with the production of the fruit. And he says, im lo hayelo efshar lechol beheter yochal be'iser. Here, I think he goes in the wrong direction. What does that mean, even? It's like a kiseitze, it's like a eishas yifas toar din, that lo dibra torah l'kenegat ha'yetzer. You know, it's, what does that mean? Like the Torah, in most mitzvot, we don't say, since you'll do a be'iser, let's just make it mutter for you. Right? So to me, it sounds like there's got to be some antecedent heter that explains why we're matir. It can't just be that, too many people would be nichshol in the Saveira, so the Torah is matir. I take it that this has to be pointing to the fact that, you know, maybe there's something about misasek v'toreach v'peirosav that generates the entitlement. Now, in Rabbeinu Bachya himself, his own intention is not so clear to me, but I would say one of two possibilities. Either it's closer to Lo Saksom, that this is just like a Tzar Balichayim idea, or this is something more fundamental about the property rights question, about labor contribution generating a claim to the property in and of itself. So that being Misasi B'Tarech B'Perosav. Again, Rabbeinu Bach himself seems to go in a different direction, But I think this would work, that would, the latter point would work nicely, especially with like kenaf shecha, kilu hein shelo. It's just this basic property right that sprouts on its own. But Yakir, you have a hand?
Yeah, I was going to say that, I mean, for Rabbi Nebachia, I mean, coordinating it with his first comment where he has this interesting move that he brings this line of Imatom Rabbias called Shavak the Chayil Choburia, which in the Gemara is a comment on an extreme shita reading of the pasuk. He brings it to justify the Gzir Shava in the first place. So I think he feels strongly. He seems to feel strongly about the fact that there really should be in a sense a right for everyone. To come, and then I think, given that, I think if you want to say that that he's allowing it, he allows that only because there's some antecedent heter. I would put that more in a kol adam type antecedent heter. I would be less likely to ground that antecedent heter in the work that he's doing.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I think just to generalize what Yakir is saying, the more you lean into the idea that I'm putting forward here, that kenaf shecha, there's something about the poels being misasig v'toreach that generates these kind of Lockean affirmative property rights, the harder it's going to be to understand the Issi ben Yehuda bias kol adam idea. It's even going to be more difficult to understand the Rambam's, oh, otherwise it's a trespass, right? How do you have license to be here, right? Because on my view, it's something unique to the Poel and his contribution. And Yakir is saying specifically within Rabbi Nebachia, the fact that Rabbi Nebachia starts off with this Lo Shavkes Chai L'Chol Birya, assuming that that's entertaining as like a legitimate Havamino, that it could be Bias Kol Adam, and it's just really not... He's not using it as evidence that it's impossible to think Bias Kol Adam. Then Yakir is saying it's less plausible to read this as unique to Poel's labor contribution. It's more about, oh, Keneged Nefesh HaMisave, right? And then maybe there's some in principle way that Nefesh HaMisave thing could apply to everybody, Maker Adin, right? But just it's more focused and concentrated in the guy who's actually working there.
Right, or the antecedent heter has nothing to do with nefesh hamisave. Meaning, there's something, you know, some general, limitation on humans' ability to on humans' property rights. So it really everybody has some claim to this stuff. We don't let everybody exercise their right because of this. I'm being a little bit extreme here. We don't let everybody exercise this right just because of it would be a disaster for the economy. So, but in people who have a nefesh hamisave, we give them the ability to exercise that right.
Such a license. Yeah. Good. Really excellent. This is Zahari, you have a comment?
Yeah. Interesting as that kind of like this Lockean theory is, I don't know. I think the, just the simple reading of Rabbi Nebachia, Keneged Yitzhara, explains a lot of the details. I think Adin's point earlier of just the radically limited scope of like, okay, mechubar in this time window, halush in that time window, and like you can ochel velo motzeitz because we don't want you taking too much, and like only because you do the karka, and like you can perhaps speculate that, oh, that's because he's out in the field away from the balabayas and no one will see. And I think like this is exactly just like the exact situation where people will be mora heter la'atmo. Maybe because they'll say to themselves this Lockean svara of, oh, I'm working so hard for this absentee landlord and I'm just a wage slave, so surely I should own some of these products in my hand. And Rabbi Nebachia would say, oh, well, that's just a gzela svara talking. And all right, fine, the Torah will give in. Well, you're just a humble poel. We'll throw you a bone, but we're going to radically limit this. Don't take anything home. Don't even take it in an efficient way with a chermesh. I don't know. I find it like a compelling explanation of a lot of the details.
Interesting. I would say, yeah, we'd have to look at all the details and figure out exactly how it works. So I'd want to see more carefully to you know, figure out exactly which view is more conciliatory with the details. Like, for example, I think the fact that it's nafshecha sabecha in my reading, not in Yakir's reading, that it's more mishalo, like kilo ochal mishalo, leans more in, like, let's say the poel property right direction than in, oh, here's a concession to your Yitzhara, right? Why couldn't the Torah say it's my property, meaning the Baal Bayis' property, and the poel could steal it? You know, kineged nefesh hamitzvah. So I think it's going to be a question about which details we're going to prioritize over others. But yeah, it's a good point. And then I would also, you know, reassert my response to Adin that the scope of the heter needn't bear on like the, right? So we might say, look, as Yakir put it, we have an economic interest in protecting Baal Bayis' property, right? So yes, we love Marx and we love Poalim, but only in like a little symbolic way, you know, like not, we don't want to get carried away with this because it would do violence to little Shevet Chai L'chol Birya. So I think we want to look more carefully at those formulations and see how the Rishonim and other Mepharshim come down on it. Yeah. Yakir, you have a hand?
No, it was an old hand, I think.
Okay, an old hand. Great, so let's stop here. This was a very good, I think, back and forth discussion. So this is just to introduce some of the main questions of the Sigya. I'm gonna add Makoros over the next day and then over the weekend to look more deeply into the specific sugyas that come up along the way. But I want to focus primarily on these kinds of questions. Like I don't want to go into, I want to look at Losafs, I'm sure, Bediso, just to get a sense of what the exact mechayiv there is and the nature. Is it, you know, Tzar Balachayim, how it relates to our sugya? But we don't want to get into Gemara Malach Dol Maiser for its own sake. We don't want to get into Amir Lanachi, Shvus, and any of those side questions you want to avoid. So I'm primarily interested in like, what's the Zchus Achilas Poel? What kind of din is it? What's the scope? Is it a chiv on the Baal Bayis, a license on the Poel? What exactly is the kind of property right that he has? How does it shed light on the theory of property rights in general? Those kinds of questions. So I think we could spend two and a half weeks on the Sugya and then move on. So there's not, I don't think there's so much here. A lot of Gemara, but in terms of like the interesting conceptual parts, well, it shouldn't take us so long. All right, Yisha Koch, we'll see you. Have a good Shabbos. And Shabbos. We'll see you on Tuesday. Great.
Good. Everyone. Good job, everyone. Good Shabbos.